Low back pain is one of the most researched conditions in the world. Yet, clinical guidelines still lack clear specific recommendations for exercise. Most people with back pain are told to just go and exercise, but no one tells them what kind, how much, or how to do it. And depending on who you ask, you probably get a completely different answer. Hi, I'm Bernadette. I'm your host, and I work with people who live with back pain. And many of them feel overwhelmed, confused, and honestly, let down by the lack of clear advice. So in today's episode, we are asking, why is the advice for back pain still so unclear? What's missing from the guidelines? And what should you actually know if you want to move and feel better without all the guesswork? I'm joined by Josielli Comacchio. She's a physiotherapist and a researcher, and she's finishing her PhD at the University of Sydney. She studies how movement and exercise can help people in pain and how science can make healthcare better for everyone. She's here to help us understand what the back pain guidelines really say and what they leave out. Josielli, thank you so much for accepting my invitation to the show, and welcome.
Thanks for having me.
So, low back pain is one of the most researched conditions in the world. So why is there still no clear recommendation for what kind of exercise actually helps?
Well, low back pain is complex, right? In most of the cases, low back pain, it's considered like no specific low back pain. And then what this means, like, involves so many conditions, so many aspects of life that can interfere how we treat that patient, how we approach that patient. We have some evidence for some types of exercise, but as I said, and as you introduced me saying, that it's still unclear what we should do for regards exercise for low back pain. We have some innumerable factors that can affect low back pain, and this we need to consider when we are studying low back pain, when we are treating patients with low back pain, that social factors, access to healthcare, and so on. It's complex.
It is. So you mentioned that there are different exercises. We do have actually evidence some type of exercises are more superior than other. I know Pilates has some evidence. Of course, it's not the best because there is no such thing as best exercise to treat back pain. But as I read the research papers, I know Pilates, sometimes yoga pops up, even strength training as well can be beneficial, right?
Yes, absolutely. We have from the evidence and amount of evidence, because I've been working with low back pain and exercise, different types of exercise, for many, many years. And we know from the evidence that some types of exercise can be better, can lead to better improvement of pain and disability, being our function, but some people use this terminology as well, such as Pilates, as you mentioned, Tai Chi and yoga. This is if you want to rank some types of exercise, but most of them, we still don't know for which population it's going to work, or which, how the frequency of exercise that's going to work is still lacking from the evidence, actually, or more robust evidence to say that this is the most benefit. And of course, not one size fits all.
This exactly
is the tricky part.
Exactly. Since I think every individual is different, we all have different bodies, we all have different lives. No one size fits all solution, because we are all unique and different, right? Some people, and there is also directional preference as well when we are talking about people with non-specific chronic low back pain. Some movements feel better than others, right? And every individual is different.
Absolutely. Anyway, we need to consider that, of course. From the literature, it's complex, because we need some certain of criteria to conduct a good and robust study to show that this exercise is good or this exercise is superior. When you say superior, is because probably we some statistic analysis that show that this exercise leads to better outcomes than compared to that other exercise. But And this is just to show the evidence and give some insights for clinicians and as well for people suffering from long back pain. But absolutely, one size not fit all, and we really need to consider other aspects. We used to call the social indicators of health. No more social determinants, but now the terminology changed a little bit for social indicators of health. And how can we support to support people with low back pain? That's a such complex condition that we said it's chronic low back pain, acute low back pain, severe acute low back pain, no specific low back pain. And then we have low back pain for people that work at workplace, low back pain for now we have in children as well, low back pain. So we have so many different populations that suffering from this condition, and we try to do our best to help them.
So we also have to look at the biopsychosocial factors as well. Am I correct?
Absolutely. This is something that it's been increasing the studies towards the social biofactors of that can influence people with low back pain. And not only the prognosis of low back pain, but also how can we work towards our intervention or approach and thinking about the social factors that can support. And then comes a lot with education, educating people, some psychological interventions that could help. And that's why probably we have some mindfulness techniques that could help people. It's something that we really, really need to consider for people with low back pain, the social factors that can influence, stress can influence low back pain. It's so many aspects of life. If you're not having like a good day or something else going on your life, of course you're going to lead to some musculoskeletal condition. This is being already proved from the literature as well.
So when I think about pain, it's kind of like a smoke alarm. And if it's too sensitive, even if you have like a, you know, make a burnt toast, it can go off because it's so sensitive. So when we are talking about stress or depression or low self-efficacy, I think about it as they are kind of like making the alarm more sensitive, right? Because yeah, they are lowering our pain threshold.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So for example, I remember when I was doing my clinical Pilates diploma, and every week when I had an exam, I felt my low back. And I realized, there is something about that. And I realized, oh yeah, stress. So what actually helped me, I just did a little bit of less. I didn't push myself that much. I didn't run that extra 500 meters. I didn't push myself when I was working out only on that week. And I made sure that I do sleep enough. I'm not saying I slept, you know, because obviously it affects your sleep as well. You are a little bit more anxious. You have a little bit of more stress. But I made sure I'm kind of like, okay, this is going to work with this week, and I just have to work through this. And yeah, I realized those factors, they matter.
Absolutely. And not only if you think about the physical factors, that could be you are studying a lot, you're sitting all day and not take enough breaks. And I'm not saying that you need to have like a correct posture, but of course you need breaks when you are same time, a long time in the same position, you need breaks. But all this situation of stress and constant worried about something, and could be depression, could be other factors that can influence. And of course, your physical type could influence, everything could influence to have an episode of low back pain. And this is how you work toward your body and understand that sometimes you need a break as well. You need a rest. Sleep is something that can help you to recover as well. This is complex because life is a balance. I truly believe that life, we need a balance for everything. We should say, don't rest for low back pain. Don't need to rest. But sometimes one day you can rest for a short period of time, of course, but keep your body moving, working towards movement. But some days we just need a good night of sleep, and then we are ready for the next day.
Exactly. And what do you think about the reason we need to have this unique approach for every single individual? Because I see women with back pain, and some women, they exercise a lot and they work out 7 times a week. So I don't have to advise them to move, right?
Yeah.
You know, probably we need to work, well, if they only do strength training, we might need to include more flexibility and mobility. If someone is just sitting in front of the computer and they don't move all day and they have back pain, we probably advise you need to move at least 2 to 3 times a week, plus walking. So we advise them, or I advise them, the physical activity guidelines by WHO, you know, 2 to 3 times strength training session per week, plus 150 to 350 minutes or 300 minutes of moderate cardio exercise like walking. But if someone is working at pushing and not sleeping enough and, you know, it goes on, then you probably need to, you know, pull back a little bit because this is too much for your body, right? So we need to kind of like balance it. As you said, we need to balance it.
Absolutely, because the advice from the guidelines is always stay active, stay active. And as you said, if you have a patient that it's already very active, what am I going to come with this? Oh, you need to be more active. It's not one advice. It's not a recipe, a cake recipe. You should do this, 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 this. Of course, we have from the evidence that more some exercise or be active is very important, but sometimes it could be a mechanical low back pain. Could be you're pushing too much. Could be you really need a break. Could be maybe minor injuries that you have on your back or something that happened in your muscle, something like this. So it's just a need to understand the whole complexity of what's going on that you're feeling pain, because the advice is not going to be stay active. And this is false when we look at the guidelines. Just stay active, stay active. But for someone that's really active, this is not working. Or people nowadays, they understand the importance of physical activity. This has been like we had a good outcomes, and because the amount of studies that being produced and saying that physical activity is good not only for back pain but for many conditions or for your life, for your psychological benefits as well. So people, they increase their health literacy in this aspect, but of course your levels of physical activity globally is still a bit low. But for some people, it's not going to be the advice to stay active. Absolutely, I agree with you. And it's more walking backwards to see what's happening that you still have low back pain or why you have this feeling of pain. And everyone feels pain differently. And we just need to understand, is that a good pain or is that a bad pain? I'd say my mom, she doesn't understand the difference when it's a pain because injury or when it's a pain because she works hard in doing a Pilates class. And then she always thinks that, oh, I'm broken because, and then when I talk with her therapist, oh no, I did this exercise with her. I work more in her core muscles. That's why she's feeling pain. Like, oh, okay, this is a good pain because you work hard in session. So this kind of difference that we need to work with our patients to understand and help them, like the decision making towards what they can do for low back pain or to improve and not only stay active.
Do you think that people struggle to get over this back pain because they don't get educated of, you know, like sleep matters, mental health matters, general exercise matters, you know, other things matters? Do you think that that can be a problem?
I think so. Some people, they really have the fear of movement and they are really only focused on pain. And they don't understand that you need to understand what pain means and how this impact your life or how this impact your body. I'm not saying that we are not considering your pain. Of course, we need to consider your pain, but there are other factors that can influence you having this low back pain. So that could be psychological factors. That could be, and not only you are broken or you have, I don't know, you were, how could we say that? It's not because you are broken or because just focus on pain. And this is some understandable low back pain. We always, the outcomes that we investigate is always pain and disability and or function. But nowadays, it's a shift towards understanding more the positive lifestyles, all the criteria like psychological factors that could influence you to have low back pain, or even though how this impacts in your life, not only the feeling of pain. Of course, nobody wants to live with this sensation of pain, but there is other factors that could influence, and then this can be mine.
And I do believe that we do have to live with some level of pain. I mean, we have physical pain and we also have emotional pain as well, time to time, because this is life. I don't think we ever gonna go through life without pain. But of course, if you are talking about debilitating, persistent pain, and it affects your daily life and you cannot function and you cannot do your daily tasks, then it's a problem.
Absolutely. If you look like the physiology or understanding how pain works on your body, feeling pain, it's hard to say it's good. It's not good, but it's something that, yeah, it's part of life and something that's showing, okay, I'm feeling my body, I'm alive. That means something's happening, but is something that I need to worry about or something that, oh, it's just today because I did this or I did that. So it's just understanding. That's why pain education is so important as well, and how we explain pain for people. Some people, they are really focused on, I'm feeling pain right now, but still walking, still doing everything normal. And then they, why am I feeling pain? This is debilitating or not? They don't understand this difference. And that's, as you said, it's sometimes it's part of life to feel something. That's mean your body is reacting to something. But of course, if this is causing you more issues, debilitating to you, is something that we need to work together to improve.
Exactly. I'm holding the clinical practice guidelines for the management of non-specific low back pain in primary care. Yes. This is an updated overview. So I am going to read, for treatment of patients with acute low back pain, the guidelines recommend reassurance on the favorable prognosis and advice on returning to normal activities, avoid bed rest, the use of non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs. So for treatment of patients with chronic low back pain, the guidelines recommend, NSAIDs, the non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs, and exercise therapy and psychological interventions as well. I have to be honest with you, I'm in Dallas, Texas, and I had my yearly checkup last year. And out of curiosity, I just asked my primary care physician, so what do you do if you see people with low back pain? And she said, you know what was her response? She's not doing anything. She's straight away sending them to the specialist. So are they following the clinical guidelines?
Which specialist they are sending them?
Probably the orthopedic surgeon or spine surgeon. Or
they are not following the guidelines at all.
Exactly.
Absolutely not. And we are really shifting towards certainly for allied health professionals, for physiotherapists, for coaches, health coaches, for
now. The thing is, training. Other things she said, which was really interesting, that she cannot ride strong medications, and that's why they are sending people to the. And that makes it even worse.
Absolutely.
This when I had my chronic low back pain, I lived actually in Australia it was in 2010. Yeah. I lived in Sydney, and I remember my primary care doctor sent me to some kind of a sports, like a doctor, and he examined me and he said, you need to do Pilates. And he was asking me, do you know what Pilates is? I'm like, no, I don't. And he said, I remember, shame on you because you're European and you should know what Pilates is. I'm like, okay. So anyway, I did some Pilates. I felt better. Unfortunately, they didn't educate me. I also was dealing with autoimmune condition as well. So I just got diagnosed with an autoimmune conditions. And until it was under control, I think, of course, it also affected my the pain in my body. And I was a little bit depressed, living away from my family. You know, I wasn't good. So all those things also contributed to my chronic low back pain, you know, my being down, another health condition. I didn't move enough because I was in an office environment as well. So all those things, you know, was kind of like adding up. But it's really interesting living in Australia and here, the advice, and probably doctors are different too. And I'm not saying all the doctors are the same, you know, and we also make mistakes as well. Maybe she doesn't even know the guidelines.
Yep, absolutely. This is, it comes out a lot of issues and questions and what happened that people not updating themselves or how... maybe the guidelines are not very clear, or people tend not, especially the clinicians, they tend not rely on guidelines and just thinking about their own expertise or experience. And this is with so many harmful interventions, or not harmful, but maybe not effective interventions, just a waste of time that you and costly as well, because sometimes you want to suggest something that you even don't know the evidence, or it's very expensive and the patient feel bad because they cannot afford, or they cannot they don't know about the intervention as well. And this is the tricky part. And I think this is the new WHO guidelines for low back pain, right, that you are holding on. Yeah, absolutely. And it's so complex because it's so important, these guidelines, but it's still a lack of how we apply this practical way, how we translate, not only for the healthcare professionals, that I truly believe that every healthcare professional should be up to date. They should update themselves. This is part of your role as well. It's not only the information that comes to me. I need to look for the information. I need to understand more. I need to improve my knowledge about this, especially if it, low back pain is something that I'm seeing every day.
But, and especially if you're a doctor.
Absolutely.
You're responsible. Absolutely.
You are responsible. You have the responsibility to be up to date. You have the responsibility to, now we have so, 2025, we have so many ways to be up to date.
It's
and
easy.
For free. Yeah. It's just the
exactly.
way how you go to Google and understand
Google Scholar.
Exactly. And understand the difference or know how to evaluate if this is a good or bad evidence, because it's not only because it's published that's good. Of course not, but understanding, giving this sense of understand what is good or what I need to know if I'm seeing this type of patients. But could be as well the guidelines that sometimes doesn't translate very well for, I would say, consumers, that's the who is involving understand this, or patients suffering with low back pain, or even family members, or how they read the WHO new guidelines is 300 pages, looks like. They have a very good infographic that can help, of course, but probably need more pushing to people understand and seeking for information.
Absolutely. And of course, if you're a doctor and if someone walks in and they have the red flags, coda equina, then don't feel things below the belt, or they have a fracture, or they have cancer, that's a completely different story. Of course, you have to go and see a doctor, or even you have to go to the ER emergency room as soon as you can, you know, if you have a fracture or coda equina.
Yeah, the red flags, absolutely. And they need to understand this difference as well.
Exactly.
This is the part of the diagnosis that people, some clinicians, they don't understand, and how to identify if this is a complex case or this is a simple, no specific low back pain. It's still a lot of things that they need to do. And the tricky issue here in Australia, the emergency department, because people go for emergency department with no specific low back pain, and then it's sometimes it's crowded. But absolutely, the clinicians, they need to know the difference. They need to understand.
That's the first thing I ask when I see someone for the first time. Did you fall in the last 2 weeks for fracture or, you know, or coda equina? Is everything working below the belt? Or, you know, because that's really important to
yeah,
know
absolutely.
For me and for them as well.
And this is your first time, right? When you see your patient, you need to sit down with your patient, understand, and talking with them. And this takes time. We see the issues in healthcare systems like so quick and 10 minutes consultation or 5 minutes consultation. What do you do? How you discover the, what happening with this patient in 5 minutes? It's not possible. It takes time. Take your time to sit down and talk to the patient and see what happened. And then, oh, this is a patient that needs a specialist. This is a patient that don't need a specialist. And not only send them without any clear guidance.
Now, do you think the guidelines are so general because everyone likes different movement and has different needs? Or is there more to it?
I absolutely believe that's more than that. I understand, and we are clinicians. Everyone is different. Every patient is unique. And we, again, this is not a cakey recipe, but the guidelines, the understanding of guidelines is to provide guidance. And the guideline needs to bring all the evidence and give you more practical insights. And let you know, let you work with your patient that which approach you're going to take after reading these guidelines. Some guidelines, they are very general. And just they give you some interventions that even we don't know if it's work or not. And even when we don't know, should be very clear that this is a weak evidence. We don't know. Or I think it still need more work towards understanding what it's being studied from the in the literature or not, and how is the evidence towards that. And what I feel that it's still missing from the guidelines is talk more about the population that you study. You understand that Pilates is one of the best interventions and they've been considering very good benefits, but we still don't know if it's better for a woman or for a man or for which type of population. Maybe in Australia, people are going to go very well with Pilates, but maybe in China, people don't go very well with Pilates. And guidelines tends to, what do we saw from the review as well, its guidelines tends to copy each other. Of course, we have the major guidelines that WHO and NICE guidelines from the UK and some countries, or they tend to just duplicate this, but sometimes it doesn't apply for your population. And this is could involve socioeconomic status. This could involve other aspects of life that this intervention is not going to be feasible or not. And this is not fault of the guidelines, I would say. It could be from the literature as well.
I just would like to translate to the listeners, because they probably don't know what WHO means, which is the World Health Organization, just so they know, because you and I know, but maybe they don't.
Yes.
So from a research point of view, what makes a guideline useful for someone living with back pain? And what makes it fall short?
Guidelines make useful. The language in the guideline should be easy to understand and use terms that someone without a medical background. Guidelines is not only for clinicians. It's for everyone that can access that. Of course, they're going to give, and they must have give you strong evidence, low evidence. What this means for a patient? What is a strong evidence? What is a low evidence? How you evaluate that? They should have parts of the guideline that needs to be easy to understand. And they give you a little bit more practical recommendations. And if, okay, we still don't understand from the literature what is practical, what is not, what is the frequency of this exercise, they should be more clear as well. And absolutely, to be useful, you should think about prevention. This is maybe answer your other question, what falls? Guidelines, they don't. Sometimes the recommendations, they are not very feasible, or they don't offer like a real world settings, or how are we going to work with this if you're a healthcare professional or community. Exercise programs is good or not. Is exercise good, but it's a group exercise or it's not a group exercise? This type of recommendations that some guidelines, they fall in, again, translating this for the community is something that the guidelines really, really falls. Some of guidelines nowadays, especially from the WHO, I think they did some infographs. That's good. Yes. I think infographs helps a lot. Imagery helps a lot. The way how we disclosure the information helps a lot and supports a lot. The patients come to you as a clinician, discuss and help with the decision-making process. This is makes me think what the guidelines going to be used for. If I have all the information, thinking about the exercise, just rephrasing what I said. Okay, exercise, not the type only. We need to know a little bit more about the exercise, not only a specific name or technique, but because if you're thinking about yoga, there's so many postures, there's so many processes of yoga. Pilates is the same. Tai Chi is the same. Is there any specific that maybe people with low back pain, they should not doing? Or of course, the clinician is going to help you to decide, but I think you need a little bit more examples, a little bit more practical examples, and of course, not only type of exercise, but dosage, intensity, was group exercise, was individual exercise. They use a machine, or they didn't use a machine, or weight. This kind of information, I think, especially when you're thinking about exercise.
Usually, you know, I work with women, only with women, with non-specific chronic low back pain, and I don't tell them which exercise is good. I just go through the repertoire and they tell me. I mean, their body will let them know, oh, this doesn't feel good. So what we do is, okay, we reduce the range of motion first, make the range of movement smaller. And if that doesn't help, we do it a little bit differently. And if they don't like it, then we just leave it, we move on. But I don't tell them, their body tell them that, okay, I don't like this one.
Yeah,
that's.
But I guess you don't go for some types of exercise that you think
are
gonna be good.
No.
Yeah,
how do you know that?
Because probably your experience.
I assess them.
Yeah, absolutely.
I assess them first. So what I do is first assess them, and I'll make sure they can actually do 15 to 20 reps of the same exercise, because if the reps are less, they can do 10 or less. That means it can be too much for their body yet. So we make sure that we can actually do 15 to 20 reps first, and then we go on, because of course we want to work on strength, mobility, and flexibility. But to work on strength, we have to find that sweet spot, 10 to 15 reps. But then for the first time, obviously, we're not going to go for the 10 to 15. We go for 20 reps. They can do it easy. Their body get used to it, used to the movement, and then we can build up from there. So what I do believe what we need to do when we are dealing with people with chronic low back pain is first make things calm, and then we slowly build it up, gradually.
Yeah, and this is personalized. Of course, everyone is unique, but I'm assuming some people come to you and say, how many sessions do I need? How many, this is
exactly
the tricky part that you should
that's
be
the
very
part.
We know that, and of course, like, just to work towards expectations for people, and this is the role of literature. We need to know at least, okay, if you do one session, maybe you can improve, it's a miracle, but it's still more to do, and people don't understand this, and this is something that lacks from the literature as well and from the guidelines. Maybe give you a little bit more practical just to help you this conversation with the and set expectation and also commitment, because most of the people, they just do one set. Oh, Pilates doesn't for me. Oh, yoga is not for me. Oh, I don't like this. It's not working. It's your problem. You're doing wrong. This is the tricky part.
I usually don't work with people who only want to sign up for 2 weeks, because I tell them I'm not a magician. I wish. At least 2 to 4 months, and then we see significant improvement, because we know there is natural history of, you know, of low back pain. Usually if you have back pain, within 6 weeks it improves within 50 to 60% the first 6 weeks, but it can become chronic, and that's the tricky part, you know. But if you start exercising, and again, it's different. If I coach someone with chronic low back pain, that it takes 2 to 4 months to feel the difference. And again, we are not just talking about exercise. We are talking about sleep. We are talking about other things as well.
All the lifestyle changes.
I help them to adjust.
Yeah, absolutely. And this is important. You work with the patient. Yeah.
Exactly. Can you walk us through how you actually do this kind of research? Like, how do you decide what to include and how do you judge quality?
Yes, this was a paper that we published last year, and it took like 2 years to be to finish the work. This is a guideline review where we included only guidelines and especially had some criteria that it's so, if you type guidelines in Google, it's going to show up so many different types of guidelines, because it could be guidelines from companies that they create guidelines for low back pain just to support work injury or prevent work injury. But we include guidelines that the national state of guidelines and guidelines that represent government, I would say like that, for the audience. And these guidelines were, after they published the WHO specific for low back pain, that's great. But before that, we include, we try to be like finding guidelines for each country, because we wanted to check what is the difference and how what they are recommending for people if they live in Brazil or if they live in Australia or if they live in UK, how, what is the difference? And basically, we come up with 18 guidelines that some, most of them, they come from US as well. We couldn't find from each specific country because probably language issues, or they don't, we had this criteria of to be at least translated to English to help us to identify and understand the recommendations. So, but basically we include these 18 guidelines and accessing only the advice, only the exercise aspect that they mentioned for the guidelines in low back pain. The guidelines should have recommendations for exercise. And that's why it makes us excluding some guidelines as well, because they didn't mention anything about low back pain or about exercise and just techniques or opioids or this kind of information. But we really focus on identify what they said for exercise. So basically, we access the evidence using some specific tools. That was the AGRI tool that is grading the evidence. Basically, it's a questionnaire where we want to check if the guidelines, they have this information, who is involved to create the guidelines, what the role that they did to create the guidelines, when they access the evidence, because it's a whole process. Before they publish, they still need to go and do systematic reviews, literature reviews, and then normally they're going to have a panel and experts' consensus that they should write in the guideline this recommendation. Then after they publish, it's a long process. From the, when you create guidelines, we know that they must be updated in 7 years, 7 to 10 years, but some guidelines, they are really, really old. And this AGRI tool, that's a phrase of guidelines of research and evaluation, is the name of the questionnaire. And then we had some panel experts as well, and then we evaluate independently, and then after we combine or answers, or we saw if we had any like discrepancies. But the AGRI tool, it's a reliable tool where we check the stakeholders' involvement, if they have, for example, some companies involved in the decision, and then how this is impact the recommendation, the rigor of development, that how many papers they included, how they search for the evidence, and clarity of presentation, if they have some infographs or if they don't have infographs, or if they, how the language that they use to translate the recommendations, and applicability and editorial independence. Applicability going to mean more, okay, I'm reading here these guidelines, it's going to be useful for my real world settings, I can apply this evidence or not.
Mm-hmm.
And we saw that some guidelines, they really support recommendations that doesn't exist anymore, or some recommendations that's very general, stay active, that's it.
Which, but is not really useful.
Yeah, what I do, just thinking about, even though I don't have low back pain, but as a clinician, how I talk to my patient, which kind of exercise, how long? If it, this hurts, what can do? Or should they rest or should they push through? It's all this kind of recommendation, especially again, as we mentioned, for physical activity, is more than only type of physical activity. You need to know more.
I do believe that, and it's just my opinion, it's not evidence or anything, or maybe there is some evidence that you need to find something, first of all, that you like doing. If you don't like to go to the gym, then don't start with the gym. If you don't like yoga because it's not for you, don't do yoga. Find something that you like, you enjoy doing at least 2 to 3 times a week, and don't stop for the rest of your life, pretty much. And I'm not saying that you will have pain for the rest of your life, maybe some, but you will see significant improvement within 2 to 4 months or 2 to 6 months. We don't know exactly. But then don't stop moving, because we were born to move. Motion is lotion anyway. Because if you recover, you feel better within 6 months, let's say, and then you don't do again anything, you're going to go back to square one. Because once you had pain in your low back, it's quite likely you're going to have it again if you don't do anything about it, if you don't strengthen it, if you don't move, if you just sit all day in front of a computer or in front of the TV on the couch.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. And it's, again, not a recipe. But
it's not. And on the other hand, if you're overdoing it and you're not changing anything in your life and you go to the gym 7 times a week without rest, and you only do strength training without mobility or flexibility training, then I think, you know, if you don't change anything, the situation isn't going to change.
Yeah, this is the hard part.
This is the tricky part.
It's very tricky because...
This is why every individual is unique. This is why I created actually my coaching program as well, because people get advice like, okay, go and exercise for your low back pain, but people don't know what to do. They don't know who to trust anymore. Doctor, you know, they actually don't really know what to do with them again, because they are not even familiar with the clinical guidelines.
Yes. And some people, okay, I'm going to do what I want, and then I go to a CrossFit class. And I'm not saying that CrossFit is being like interesting results from the literature, but we need to know exactly some. I completely agree with you that people need to do what they enjoy doing, but we still need to be more cautious as well to see, okay, which type of exercise should I start, or should I start a bit more slow or low impact exercise? This kind of information that's still missing from the literature as well.
And I think the beginning, and this is why it's important to calm things down first. You know, if you are having persistent, really bad back pain, maybe starting with CrossFit is not a good idea. This is why Pilates, Tai Chi, or even yoga can be per se safer. I don't like to say this, but it can be better for you, maybe, you know, because we need to calm things down first.
Yeah, absolutely.
And you need to make sure that you're more confident to move. You're confident. You're not fearful to move. You don't have that catastrophization. You know, you don't have that fear of movement, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And the complex part is stay active can be like interpreted differently depending on the individual, for example. For some, it might be like a brief walk. Okay, I'm active. My mom, she always said that she's very active because she go to do her groceries walking, but it's a 5 minutes walking. And then it's like, mom, this is not to be active. You need to walk a little bit more to be active, and more time and more frequency, like 3 days per week at least, or maybe more minutes. And this is the tricky part as well, one that is not very clear what people need to do or not. And advising patients to move within their pain tolerance, for example. Some people, they're going to reinforce the misconception of any pain is harmful. And
yes, they are damaging tissues. That's what they think. Pain actually doesn't equal tissue damage.
Exactly. And I'm not going to move right now because I'm feeling pain, or I'm not going to do this exercise because it's painful, and they don't understand the difference of pain or how this is... how you progress as well with your exercise, because the exercise needs progression. Otherwise, you don't see a lot of benefit. You need progression. You need consistency. I think the word is consistency. And this is complex, yeah.
Exactly. Now, what happens when back pain advice is based more on opinion than on strong advice?
this can lead to a lot of harmful interventions or no effective interventions. That is two sides when I see this question. I can see, of course, we need to consider and talking to your healthcare professional, your coach, and discuss the benefits or how can we improve together. But when it's only based on opinion and previous experience, this can lead to misleading information or maybe some interventions that's not completely supported by the evidence, or you can waste your time. I would say with the very clear words, you can waste your time.
And money.
And money, of course. Money. Yeah, the most important, because when you're not spending money, you're not seeing results, people are going to suffer even more, I guess.
So stakeholder input also affects these guidelines, right? Do you think that helps or hurts people with chronic low back pain?
Yeah, this is, we need stakeholders, and it's very important. Stakeholders things can be people interested in, can be the clinicians as a stakeholders, can see consumers, representatives as a stakeholders as well. But this is can be, if only rely on stakeholders, can be harmful, can be not very, not following the evidence and waste of time, as we said, and leads to, especially if there's some interests, and then we see lots of companies that they are part of the developing some guidelines, and they tend to leave their opinion for what they selling, what they are, their own interested, and then this is the tricky part. But stakeholders also have the meaning to look this, okay, this is the literature, but this is apply or this is doesn't apply in the real world settings. We need to find as well a balance. Patients expected their healthcare professionals to offer reliable evidence base, but then recommendations are based on personal opinions or their own interests. This is can be like determine the trust or impact the trust between patients and clinicians.
As of today, what is the most effective exercise to treat chronic non-specific low back pain? You can give me a couple.
Yeah.
For the listeners.
Thinking about ranking exercise, but then I'm gonna explain this as well. We have a stronger evidence for Pilates, for core strengthening, for some yoga. We have been talking a lot about walking as well. But we're still not clear about, the adverse event or the harmful part, because the literature is not being investigating a lot the harmful part of this or what this can cause when you're doing lots of sessions, because the studies, they only show if you improve or not, and they don't control adverse events. If the adverse events, this is a second study that you just published, and maybe we can do another podcast about this study, because we really investigate the types of exercise and what the literature says about this. But we have a strong evidence for Pilates, yoga, and walking, but it's still more to know. We need to know more a bit when, how often we do this exercise or a specific posture or any adverse event that can cause. From the literature, most of the studies in yoga, they show some adverse events, but normally it's just pain after a session, but can be easy really quick. So, but because they started to investigate these.
But so still, Pilates is probably the top one, right?
They are being like strong evidence right now about Pilates, and people are producing lots of evidence about Pilates. Some of techniques, they graded activity that involves education as well. It's very, very important and being showing good evidence as well.
Okay. So if you, very interesting question, if you could rewrite the guidelines today, what would you want people with back pain or to hear instead of just stay active?
I would like more specific types of exercise and as well the characteristics of the population that use this exercise. And then you're going to help a lot for decision making. It's going to help a lot think if this is something that I would like to go through or not. It's going to help me to decide if I can use this technique. So considering the factors of population aspects, we don't have like age who did this intervention or if gender. And I'm not saying that we're going to classify people or say that this is not important if you are a woman or if you're a woman, because exercise for everyone. But it's going to help us to understand a little bit more the complexities of exercise, and especially dosage. How many sessions these people did, or how was the session? More specific, when you're talking about Pilates, how many types of exercise you have? Hundreds. I think it's going to be more clear and interesting to know. Even like walking, how long these people walking to be like effective, or walking which pace they to be effective. Running, same. I think a little bit more clear advice is going to be interesting to know, to see and understand the complexities of exercise.
For someone listening right now who feels confused or scared to move, what would you want them to know?
You're not broken. This is cliche, but you're not broken. You're not weak. You're definitely not alone. And we are working towards giving you more practical advice and help you to improve your low back pain. And your back is strong, adaptable. It's made to move. It's just a matter of thinking about an exercise. And again, this is a bit cliche, but of course you need to choose an exercise that you enjoy doing, but try new things as well. And talking to a healthcare professional, someone that can help you to decide and help you to set your goals and improving.
Very good. A healthcare professional who doesn't just look at the body, absolutely, who looks at the whole person, the who whole talks person. About also, because I think it's really important for the listeners, contributing factors, right?
Absolutely.
Which is mental health, sleep, physical activity, other things. It's not about disc degeneration or disc herniation, because even pain-free people, as per research, it's not what I'm saying. It's the research as of today. Even pain-free people, they're walking around with disc degeneration and disc herniation. They just don't know about it because they don't have an MRI.
Yeah, absolutely. And try learn about this. This is important. So, health literacy, understand reading. We have lots of good information, and that's why a healthcare professional can help you to guide through what you should read or help you discuss and help you to decide. It's decision making process is so important, and shared decision making, it's important. And not only thinking about a specific technique or a specific exercise, but also, as you said, all the aspects, looking you as a individual and considering the other aspects of your life, what's going on in your life. This is so, so important. Not only treat that piece of your body, that part of your body.
We actually touched based on working within pain tolerance, and everybody's pain tolerance is different, right? Yeah. Your pain tolerance is different than my pain tolerance, because we are all unique and different, right?
Yeah.
And that's what I actually advise, and that's what I do with my people, with the woman in my team, that work within pain tolerance. Little pain is okay, but intolerable, the pain that stops you from moving, that's not good.
Absolutely.
Right? Because some pain is okay. You're already dealing with chronic low back pain. We cannot take the pain away, but we still need to work towards, you know, pain-free life. And in order to get there, we need to start exercising, if we need to exercise, right? So a little pain is okay within pain tolerance.
Absolutely. I completely agree with you. And everyone is unique. Everyone's going to be different. And it's just the way how we understand things and how we try new things and understand our body. And as much you read and talking about this is important. That's why this conversation is important for people to understand and the complexities of pain and how you should work towards your improving yourself as a general everything. Yeah.
Well, I hope we can help someone with this episode. Thank you so much, Joselly, for joining us at the Back to Movement podcast. And thank you so much for the listeners for being here. I hope you enjoyed this episode. And this is all for this time. And I hope I see you next time.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.